are living in an artificially induced state of consciousness that resembles sleep. The poor and the underclass are growing. Racial justice and human rights are non-existent. We have been lulled into a trance. They have made us indifferent to ourselves, to others. We are focused only on our own gain. That is their primary method of survival. Keep us asleep. Keep us selfish. Keep us sedated.
You're listening to Toward Anarchy on the Republic Broadcasting Network. Here's your host, Michael Storm.
It is great this time we get to spend together, so I truly appreciate that you do take the time to come here and spend it with me. All of you who do, even though I never hear from you, I see you out there. You're there, and it's fantastic, and it's wonderful that you do come back all the time and listen, so it's really appreciated. You don't even know how much it's appreciated. Much to talk about. We have a lot to catch up on, and there's so much going on in the world, but we're going to narrow it down. I want to keep the focus on Independence Day. I want to know, what is Independence Day? What are we celebrating? What is this 250 years of America all about? Why do we celebrate the 4th of July? I know that ultimately it means very little to me, more than just sort of blowing up the fireworks and getting to spend time with family. All wonderful, fantastic things. And if it has to be, you know, 4th of July or Independence Day or whatever you call it, or some other holiday to get the family together and people to spend time together and maybe in some ways forget about it all. It's a little tough with the 4th of July. That's kind of why I wanted to look at Independence Day and the 4th of July and what it means to us and really go through the history of it all. And in brief, you know, it's only 57 minutes or so that we'll get to spend together here. And I want to cover the basics of it and make sure. And there's a reason for it. And I'll explain all that here, too, because it became apparent to me after deciding to do it. So we'll dive all into that here in just a moment. Subscribe and follow along at Toward Anarchy on Facebook, Instagram, X, YouTube, Rumble, at Toward Anarchy. If it's not at Toward Anarchy, it's probably not me. If you're ever in Topeka, Kansas, swing by Amazing Fantasies. It's a comic book shop I own. Stop by and say hi. Wherever you are finding me at today, wherever you're hearing the show, listening to the show, watching the video, whatever it happens to be, it could be CastBox, it could be on iTunes. Well, it's not iTunes anymore, right? It's just Apple Music now, I guess. Wherever it is, click that like button, tap it, smash it, declare it independent, and then spend the next 250 years using it to the point of abuse and basically slavery. Whatever it takes to get you to get that button to pay attention, whatever it takes to get me to get you to click that button, because I tell you, it's extremely important. It really is important to me. It just is. It in so many ways, you can't even know if you don't do this how important that little like is. And I'll tell you why it's so important, just really briefly, because it's just popped into my head as I'm thinking about it, because of what I said about getting to spend this time with you. Most of the people that we spend this time together, you and I, that's it. We spend the time together. You go on about your way, and then, you know, if you come back, you come back, and we do it again, and you go on about your way. And it's most of the people that listen to the show, they hear it, they take what they can from it. If it's entertaining at any point, fantastic. If they learn something from it, fantastic. If it sets them off on a path, wonderful. All of these things are terrific, and it's true, and it happens, and I see it in the numbers of people who listen to the show versus the number of people who click the like button. Seriously, it's so important. I've talked about this before, how you watch a Pink Floyd video or something, it's 1.2 billion views and 50 likes. I'm exaggerating a little bit on the 50 likes, but the likes are nothing in comparison to the total views. And some of that is because many people have listened to it over and over again, but a lot of that is because people just go on and they listen and they're doing their thing, and that's wonderful. It takes that effort. I know as a content creator, it's something that I had to teach myself and make myself do. And so I give up that like, and I make sure that I'm heard in that pool of likes and for the people that I actually like and value the content. So I appreciate it. That's how important it is. That's all I'm really getting at. TowardAnarchy.com to follow along as always. No matter where else I'm at, that's where I'm always at, towardanarchy.com. That's my little section of the internet that I've carved out for myself, my little niche, and I'm always putting stuff up there. There's plenty of links and articles and quotes and of course, episodes of the show. It's fantastic. Visit towardanarchy.com to find some more. And so let's get into this thing. Let's do this. Let's talk about Independence Day. We'll put it to the anarchist audit. It's funny because, again, it doesn't mean much to me. It's really more about worshiping the state than it is the idea of liberty itself, obviously, or it wouldn't be so celebrated. I think we'd boycott it, in fact, and let the state sort of put on its little 250th anniversary special and nobody attend. But then again, it's kind of like most of those football games. They don't really care. I've talked about it in terms of voting. I've talked about it in terms of filling stadiums and selling tickets. The fact is that as long as they're making their money doing what they do and they can continue to get away with doing what they do, they don't really care if you, in particular, participate, sit in the stands, buy a ticket, show up to vote, whatever it is. They don't really care because you don't matter. We try to have this shared identity, and some of it's true, some of it's real, and some of it is very real on a day like July 4th. And I think that we would boycott it if truly the majority of people thought about liberty on July 4th, on Independence Day, if they thought about independence as opposed to just another celebration. Of course, the people getting together, fantastic, wonderful family, love it. It's great. Everybody have a cold beer, have some hot dogs, blow some things up. But it'd be nice if the next day we didn't forget what it's all about, why we were able to do that, why we're able to share in that experience together, and what created this celebration that we have every year, and what's more important about its understanding, what in its meaning, and all of it, the founding documents, all of it. I'm here again about to prove that the anarchist knows more, cares more about liberty and the founding of this nation than most people who call themselves patriots. But I did almost forget it was the 4th of July. It wasn't until at the night of the 3rd here that I was thinking that, you know, this is a good time to look at this. And a couple of fortuitous things happened after I sat down and put a couple of notes together and said, all right, this is the way we'll do it. We'll talk about a little bit about the founding and some of the events that created it and why the document exists overall. And after I put all that down and I'm getting ready, I'm just doing my thing, and I come across this wonderful poll from the Cato Institute. And if you know the Cato Institute, it's a libertarian think tank. So that should tell you something about this data, the pool of people that this data is coming from. It means that it's either not compromised or it's a lot worse than we think it is, because the Cato Institute is a libertarian institute. So if it's taken from its own people, as it were, if the results are supposed to be skewed toward a libertarian or a conservative point of view, I think the results prove that wrong, or it proves that, and I don't believe this, this, that the Cato Institute is more like the Libertarian Party instead of a libertarian think tank. I don't think it is. I think the Libertarian Party is that wishy-washy space. I think the Libertarian think tank that is the Cato Institute, while it still holds some value, and the values that it holds are related to the founding of the nation and the ideas expressed, not necessarily totally written out and spelled out for everybody, but the value of the idea of individuality, and that we ourselves as people come before the state, that the state doesn't exist without us, and then along comes with that all these other libertarian ideas. And so where do these things all come from, and what do they have to do with July 4th? Well, I'm thinking that, and then here comes this Cato poll, and it just proves that, to me, that the general population kind of needed this conversation, whether it knew it or not. So here I am already doing the conversation, and this is the poll. 53% could only 53%, I should put it. That's how I should put it. Because it is. It's only. It's barely half of the people were asked if they could identify what Independence Day was, what July 4th marked, that it's about the adoption of the Declaration of Independence. Not even the signing of it. The signing of it took place over days. It was the adoption by the committee that wrote it and reviewed it, which was a small committee, five people or something like that, Jefferson and a couple other guys, a few other guys, minimal. It was a very minimal number of people selected to draft it, and then all those other guys signed it eventually over a period of time, and those are the guys that, you know, had arranged the colonies and this. So it's all very much this simple idea expressed in this document about individualism, and in the idea that the state is there to serve the people and not the other way around, all expressed in this document. And only 53% of people today, you know, surveyed numbers, whatever, there's always going to be some skew, some difference. But this gives us a starting point. And because it's the Cato Institute, and because this is what I started to say just a minute ago, because it doesn't skew heavily to them knowing it, to the audience that they asked, knowing these points and knowing what the Independence Day was and what the Constitution is and what other questions they asked here, and I have a couple more of them here, because it doesn't skew heavily, like 95 to 100%, if the real Cato Institute following people that would listen to, that would respond to specifically the Cato Institute, as opposed to just a poll, would skew heavily toward knowing these things. So I think it makes a really good representation. I think it's a good sampling, as good as any, you know, small sampling of a larger thing can be. It just gives us something to work with. It gives us an idea, and I think maybe it's accurate enough. It's got to be some value, right? So, nationwide poll, 53% could correctly identify that the adoption of the Declaration of Independence was the historical event that marks, that we celebrate on July 4th. 58% of the people who responded did not know the purpose of the U.S. Constitution. That's obviously not a Cato Institute audience right there, that doesn't know the purpose of the Constitution and couldn't even, and begin, let alone begin to express it, I think, which may be a bit of a more of what's going on here, because one of the points that's coming up, I think, points to that. 57% could not explain why the U.S. declared independence from Great Britain in the first place. They didn't know about the usurpations and about the taxation without representation. They didn't know any of that language and have any understanding of that. And obviously there must be some limited value in teaching it, but there's not probably a greater value in it realized within the confines of the state and the paradigm of left and right, you know, Democrats and Republicans, limited value in that. A greater understanding on the outside, somebody like myself, somebody who can use it to look at the way things are and sort of help other people understand that it's not as simple as, it's all groovy and everything. Everybody's rights are perfectly protected because the piece of paper says so and everything's going to be fine. No, it's not as simple as that. That's for sure. And these, I guess it's one of these points that you can look at when the so-called patriots and the people that celebrate these things and live in this nation don't know these things. That's a little bit bothersome in terms of just the very nature of why we celebrate these things. It's fine. All of them are going to celebrate. We're free. We're happy. But why? Why are we free? Why are we happy? It's buried a little bit further underneath in all this, I think. 86% express their gratitude to be Americans, and here's what I was talking about. 60% said they believe the country has moved away from its founding principles. So it's the same population of people. It obviously can't be true. You can't have 58% of the people who surveyed not know what the main purpose of the U.S. Constitution is and actually say that they believe that the country has moved away from its founding principles. Now realize that 40% of that could be the other 40% that did know the Constitution, what it was for. So 20% of people, 20% of that 60% of people are lying when they say that they believe the country has moved away from its founding principles because they don't even know what the founding principles are. They don't know what the documents are. They don't know why the documents were created. They don't know why they need to be enforced or understood today. And that is pretty problematic, and I think it points again to the validity of the survey and just a general understanding of people and what they know about the Independence Day and the 4th of July. So let's look at the whole history of it and talk about what we can here and where we're at and see if we missed the point or not. I made a few notes about through the times and dates and things like that so that I would be sure to have those correct, but this isn't necessarily a conversation in any order. It's just about the ideas and things that happened that framed the Declaration of Independence, the Revolutionary War, all of that. So we're celebrating the Declaration of Independence when we're celebrating July 4th. It was 250 years ago, and ultimately it's not the complete adoption of it. We're celebrating the day that the committee adopted it, not the day that everybody else was already was presented with what the committee came up with and agreed to it and signed to it. But for all intents and purposes, that was the declaration, right? That's it. That's the when. That's the where. It's a statement of freedom. It's a statement that the people are what creates the state, that the state is there for the people, that if the state is not there for the people, that the state should be dismantled. That is the Declaration of Independence, that when you have you don't throw the baby out with the bathwater. You don't get rid of everything and just, you know, sort of burn down the Capitol every 5 years because you're tired of the particular guy who's in office. But you probably also don't adopt the thing carte blanche for 250 years as the economy is destroyed, as the state, and particularly central power, gets more power, more not just political power, but physical power, arms itself to protect itself and defend itself, not from foreign enemies, but from us, from the people who would otherwise decide that it's time to get rid of it, that you change it, that if it doesn't work for you, that's what this document is about. That's why it's important. That's why I've said over and over again that it's the only document that matters, truly, when we're talking about the documents that frame this nation. Everything else before it or after it isn't really as good or is some subjugation of the natural idea that people people come before government, that there's some excuse made, that some power can be given, that democracy can take place and hold for 250 years, and we can pretend like things are getting better when they're not. Society and life and reality in general is fairly much better, but America as a founding and as something of an ideal for the rest of the world to strive to be doesn't exist anymore. It's not a thing, and it hasn't been for a long time. If it really ever was, depending on who you ask about the framing, the founding of the nation, this document, these ideas, they birthed a new nation free from British rule, and it's the important statement that does it. Obviously, you have to fight for it, but by the time this comes along, you realize that we've been at war for a year already. The revolution is already going on for a year. The revolution didn't start after the claim of independence. The revolution was already going on. The train of usurpations, the thefts, the damage, these things all were existing. They had been going ongoing for a long time in some cases, but most of them are in this sort of 15, 20 year period, something like that, where the states are so much more independent and the, you know, business is going well. That's a big part of it. They're able to conduct business and they're able to conduct trade and they have their charter, so they have permission from England to do that. That's what it's what it's about. It's more important than the Constitution, because the Constitution is just the framework for the federal system. It's not a contract. You hear that. It's often referred to as being a contract between the people and the government, but it's not. It's a one-party document. It's created by the government for the government. Right there, the fact that it's a one-party document, none of the people signed it. We're not the people. None of the people that showed up there, that signed the documents, any of them, were us. They didn't represent us. It wasn't written by us. It was written by them, for their federal system. We weren't given a chance to even question the idea. It was done for us. It was a small percentage of the population that did it for us, and they took away the individual power and replaced it with a centralized authority. That's the basic fact. It took away the sovereignty of the individual states and turned it into a centralized authority, much like a king or something. In fact, they even offered a kingship and tried to start out that way. But the Constitution is the organizing, the guiding of the federal government. If you want to know what it is, it's Articles of Incorporation. It's the same thing that business people would do to get to, when they get to get this. This is why there are so many arguments about the founding of the nation and about the rich people founding the nation and about it not being about our interests, because, well, it kind of isn't at the heart of it. If you look at particularly the Federalists and the things that they did and the argument that they're making and the document they created, it's Articles of Incorporation. It's exactly the same thing that me and my business partners went to do to create, to start a business together, so that we agreed together. Whether everybody else came along with it or not doesn't matter, because we're the business partners. So it's a really big deal when you look at the Constitution in particular, and it's one of the reasons why the Declaration of Independence is so much more important than the Constitution. The Constitution is useless, especially at this point. And so they've been at war for more than a year already. April 1775 is when the revolution started, right? But this is July of 1776 that we're talking about. So it's been more than a year. And this all started, the whole war started, because Parliament was in debt. England was in debt after the Seven Years' War. They've been fighting. It's what we know as the French and Indian War, right? And so they're battling with the French. And they had lost a lot of money in doing so. Both sides did, in fact. And so they're still battling. And in fact, America is really just a proxy battle, just like Afghanistan was in the 80s between America and the Russians. The America, the colonies, the 13 colonies that founded this nation, it's really a battle between England and France, and it's just a proxy battle being held in America, and it's even considered not by some. It depends on who you ask, and we'll get into some of this. They suggest that the revolution wasn't a revolution, that it was really just a colonial uprising, and you know, there's enough that points to it. There's, again, when you look at the Articles of Incorporation, it's not a protection. If you look at the Bill of Rights, I've mentioned this so many times before, how the Bill of Rights is an afterthought. It's something that they came along with and said, oh yes, well, we need to protect the people. We don't care about the people, but let's go ahead and let the people pretend like they're protected while we're in business together. That's the gist of it. So they're in debt. They try to levy taxes to raise revenue. And the colonies don't like that, of course, because they are not represented. That's part of the argument, is that they're not represented because, well, how can they be represented? This is why they have charters, so they can have their own governorship and so they can have their own economy. They don't have to rely on England, and they don't have to get permission from England to do things, to go ahead and progress and to grow and to make business contracts, let's be honest. So, you know, this is a decade after things like the Stamp Act and the Townsend Acts, and of course the Boston Massacre is in there because of the tax, the Stamp Act tax, and the direct tax on, it was printed materials, things like legal documents and or magazines, and as simple as playing cards or dice. It's just all of these things, and it's all about business. It's all about forcing them to do business, and it's about silencing people too, because if you're talking about taxing documents, you're talking about making it so normal people have to pay more to get important information. That's a big point to make, because keeping the normal person dumb while they're running their business, while they're creating their organization that is America, that's pretty important. You keep them on the idea that, oh, we're just breaking free from England, and keep waving that flag around to keep them from understanding that you're organizing a corporation, and that in doing so, that you know, this is the longer term picture here, right? Obviously, some of these people were fully aware of the types of things that a centralized authority and that they would lead to. These sorts of they're talked about. They're all expressed. These people have diaries. They have documents. They have papers. They have biographies. All of this information is out there that they're telling you well in advance that this is how government works, that if you do things this way, it's going to end up going in this direction. And did they stop from going in that direction? Did they stop at the Declaration of Independence and winning their war? No, they didn't. They continued toward a centralized authority. And so, again, Declaration of Independence, much more important than the organized corporation that would follow not long after, with the destruction of the Articles of Confederation and the birth of the Constitution. These ideals are gone then, and they're certainly wiped out by the time you get past the Bill of Rights, because they stopped and they said, oh, wait a second, oh, we have to recognize mobilize the people, otherwise they're not going to buy this story. We're not going to get away with this. And so we'll recognize the people as an afterthought. We'll give them these concessions, and it shouldn't really affect our business because it's a longer story than we have time with to concentrate on those specific things, because we've done the Constitution and the Bill of Rights anyway. But once you get outside the Bill of Rights, they immediately change it. I don't know if you understand this or if you know this or not, but it immediately changes. What goes from being about the people goes back to being about the corporation, about citizenship, about the constructs of the state apparatus and not the individual. And that changes by the 11th Amendment. You go look at it. It's not me making it up. This isn't about me imagining something changed, that there was a fundamental shift. It's in the language. You see it yourself. The Bill of Rights is a people's document. The people is all over it. We are the people. We have these rights. Government can't take them away from us. By the time you get to the 11th, rights belong to citizens, and they can take them away from you because citizens are constructs of the state. All they have to do is declare you an enemy of the state or not a citizen in one way or another, and they take away all your rights. I don't know if you noticed or not, but there is an unaccountable police force, federal police force, running around the nation, rounding up people on the premise that they're not citizens. So I didn't make any of this up at all. It's all there for everyone to see. You don't have to believe me on a single thing that I talk about in the sense of the state usurping the power of the individual. And by the state, I mean the centralized authority, not even the individual states. They were already bad enough as it is. So you have the Boston Tea Party, right? That was 1773. That's when they threw, that's the Sons of Liberty. These guys tossed 340 some odd chests of tea into Boston Harbor, which amounted to about 10,000 pounds sterling at the time. That's a lot of money. That's a lot of cash. And that's what led to any number of these events in turn that certainly come afterward. The Boston Massacre, they closed the harbor, they closed the Boston Harbor. It was a blockade ultimately. I don't know if it was, I guess you have to physically blockade, right? I didn't really go and look up that. I just know that that's what happened, is that they said the harbor's closed. Britain said the harbor's closed. Parliament said the harbor's closed. You can't do trade anymore. And that was until the ballot, that 10,000 pounds of sterling was paid back to the East India Tea Company. So we're talking about corporations battling and using the state ultimately as a means of forcing people to do business with them, and taking away the charter of Massachusetts and making them a colony again and appointing council and giving the governor more power. These are all things that followed. They for this, I was talking about the printed documents and how you tax the printed documents and it keeps things from being shared. It keeps information from being shared. Well, one of the things that you keep from being shared is tracts of information, legal ones anyway. If they're illegal, they're illegal, right? But if they're legal, if they're stamped, but if you limit that, or if it costs more for the average person to have to produce something to put out information that questions the narrative, questions government. How do you do that if you have to pay more? If it has to go through an official process of some sort, you have to do it illegally. And well, that's just illegal. You don't have to worry about that. You see what I mean about there's these spaces where they can give you rights and protections. They can look at it and say, well, sure, that's not going to interfere with our business. It won't make any difference in our business. And so that's what they did. And this is where all of these things come from. You have the Administration of Justice Act, which creates special laws and courts for criminals of the crown. These are officials, people of the crown, the cops, the lawyers, the people who work for the crown, the barristers, you would say at that time, the people, the politicians, the boat captains, whoever, anybody that works for the crown, if they commit a crime against one of the colonies, colonies or a colonist, it doesn't matter because the colonists can't use their courts. They've usurped their courts. These are the things that created this need to set up this Declaration of Independence to become ultimately recognized in the end by 1783, right, when it's all over, ultimately recognized as independent states. And that ultimately means they're independent corporations that can do business with England or anyone else that they want to do business with. Let's be real clear. That's what charters, that's what incorporation, that's what all of this is about. It's so that he can do business with each other as businesses, and they have permission to do it. That's what the Civil War is about. It's about these southern colonies in a lot of cases. Obviously, there are other factors. I don't want to offend anybody. But the economic factors were that the South was should have been able to, just like the colonies wanted to be able to, free to make contracts with other states, with other foreign states, whatever it happens to be, to get the goods and services that they needed to conduct the business of their business of their state. And the North said, no, you can't do that. And that's what a lot of the Civil War was about. Well, that's what the Revolutionary War was about. I know people don't look at it this way and they don't understand it this way because they don't understand that our nation is completely founded to protect individuals and their private property. That's it. That's all the founding of the nation was supposed to, and ultimately it was rich people. It was a certain class of people. They owned everything, and so they weren't too worried about the rest of us. The rest of us were just servants. We were slaves in some cases, in a lot of cases. Some of these guys that we're talking about, liberty, held slaves. Most of them. In fact, you know, these guys are complaining about the taxation as if that was the big problem. They had a 1.5% tax rate. It was one of the lowest. It certainly, by the time all of this is happening, it's the lowest because everybody else is getting hit with 4 or 5% because of the 7 years war, and they're trying to recoup that debt. And so it not only is it a really low tax rate, relatively, zero tax rate's the best tax rate. Voluntary everything is the best way to do everything. But it's the highest wages in the modern world by like a 25% gap. Everybody, you know, England, all those guys, France, the colonies are making more per capita as individuals, as businesses, as a corporation than the rest of the world. The rest of the settled world. And that's a big deal, especially with a 25% gap. If you want, I guess I could give it to you in the terms from then. It's like $12 to $17 an hour, the pounds sterling an hour. It was there. And that's insane. That's so much more money than even some of the richest people make today. It's an insane amount of money. Certainly, if you took it in actual silver and the value of silver, think about what that would be. But it's just they're the richest people in the world, and so it's not about the taxation. It's more about the lack of representation. England doesn't do anything for us. Why do we have to follow their corporate policies? Why can't we make our own trade deals with other nations? Why can't we do trade with France? Why can't we trade with anybody else who wants to trade with America and America wants to trade with? Why does England have a say in that? Remember, that's what this is about, truly. The Revolutionary War, of course, would create tons of huge debt for the state. It's, you know, millions, tens of millions, 50, 60 million, something like that total between sort of state and central authority expenses, and a lot of a lot of it was private financing and private debt. It's crazy. When they talk about going into debt, of course it is. They're talking about their businesses. These are a bunch of businessmen. They have business interests in the land and in the people that are on the land. And it's being usurped. It's being taken away from them by a central authority that provides them no benefit. Where have we heard that before? They end up borrowing a lot of money from France and other nations, and of course, they, like every war, the debt is a real key factor in the sort of following problems, the things that come after. So there's a huge debt in 1783, and by 1789, there's a French Revolution, and that's because the French are in debt from having just supplied America with a bunch of finances and support for their war against England, a proxy war, exactly what I was telling you. It's really looked at, like I was saying, as something of a colonial uprising, and that the French Revolution was really the greater revolution. But I wanted to address that when that kept popping up as an idea, because there's a reason to believe that that's somewhat true, because we understand, especially people across the network, support Republic Broadcasting Network, republicbroadcasting.org, do me a favor, and people across the network especially will know about this. They will understand about the connection between the Hellfire Club, the Hellfire Clubs, the possibility of Franklin and other people being involved, and you know, there's the Masonry connection. There's all these various underground, what would be underground, certainly to the authority. That's the point, right? That's what makes them underground. I'm not saying whether they're good or bad or whatever, but the Hellfire Clubs, these were sort of British and Irish and Scottish, what you would call a rake. They're rakes. They're men. They're R-A-K-E-S, rakes. And these are sort of perverts. They're literally men engaged in immoral conduct that the state or the religion finds immoral. So whether it's really truly immoral or not is a question of the individual acts and the people participating in them. So that's what really matters. But that's what these rakes are, these rakish men, womenizing and indulging and gambling and drugs and liquor and all these sorts of things. These were the guys that made, but they're people with money, but they're basically turning their back on the idea of organized state-backed religion. These things all intertwined with each other to bolster each other's power, particularly in England. That's why a bunch of people broke away and wanted to have their own religious freedoms, and they came to a place called America, or they named it America when they got here. I don't know what they thought they were doing. They just landed on a rock somewhere and set up shop and hoped that it all worked out, because they didn't like the way that the state and the religion were one in England and everywhere else in the modern world, such as it was at the time. And their motto was "Do what you will," that sort of thing. It's a very anarchist ideology. But what it really is a libertarian ideology. It's the ideology that framed the Declaration of Independence. It's the ideology that framed all of these independence movements at that time period, because those were the people that put their money behind it, obviously, because they're problem was with the state, and their problem was with the hokey religions and practices that the state propped up, or vice versa at the same time. And so it's clear that it completely makes sense. You have really, again, the best ideals of liberty and the foundation, just what I was saying about this anarchist knowing more and understanding more about liberty and the founding of this nation than the so-called patriots, because it comes out of the sort of values that shape the true anarchist view, the libertarian values, the libertine values, these ideas that were adopted by everyone from the anarchists to the libertarians to the hippies to the Church of Satan, if you want to go that far. And again, read the book. Don't bash it. If you gave your God an opportunity to talk, give God's made-up enemy an opportunity to talk to and see what it was about before you dismiss it. The rituals aren't that big of a difference. And the human sacrifice and things like that are associated with Satanism. That's not what is called for. And the only reason I know this is because as a child, I wanted to know the why. What I just said about religion and why there's this God and why he has an enemy in Satan and what Satan had to say about it or what it was. And certainly, so I went and looked and I found these things, and it wasn't particularly different from of a religion, that it just had these better foundings of individualism and voluntary interaction. The details, they make a difference and they matter. And so for you to suggest anything other about one of these ideas just because they're associated with the other requires you to actually go look at those things that they're associated with, those other things, and find out if they are or not, because otherwise you can't talk about them. They're not, you don't have the information, and you can say it's the bad guy, you can say it's the enemy, you can say it's the antithesis, but it's just a different view, it's just a different idea. And I'm not espousing anything. I'm just suggesting that if you intend to do as I do and evaluate things, that you have to have the full spectrum perspective of the topic, don't you? I don't think it's too much to ask. Maybe it is. Maybe it really is. But we know that these are the things that kind of shape the Declaration, and that's why it's more important. It really is just that clear, undeniable spot of placing people before the cities and the states and the nations and all these other things that come along after the people, no matter how much the scum who run them don't like it, no matter how much the ones who've captured the jurisdictional rule of that space don't like it, it is a fact. It certainly is in America. So let's look at it. It was 1.5%, the richest people in the world. All right, we're the richest people in the world, relatively speaking, still generally. It's not as great as it used to be. There's a lot of debt that covers up the richness, the real true wealth that exists, or lack of it would be the better way to put it, compared to 30 or 40% in what's taken from us today. And now it's tough to put a number on the percentage that is taken from us every day as individuals, but as a sort of median, 30 to 40%, and the 240% is if you own a home, if you have more money, that sort of thing. It's not the normal. The normal is closer to the 30%. So that's crazy that literally one third of everything that we have to do is for the state. It's for an apparatus that does almost nothing for us. Almost every facet of the state exists for and of itself and has little or nothing to do with the individual, particularly what the individual needs. That's protection, in a justice sense, in a societal sense, where you're not just trying to go shoot your neighbor every time his tree falls on your fence. Yes, it's damaged. Who owns what? Why? Well, the wind blew the tree down. I don't really owe you for that, do I? Well, it was your tree, man. It hit my fence. I paid for the fence. You should owe me. I don't really see it that way. We should probably go to court and have that conversation. And that leads, of course, to what true justice is and what true recompense for being violated is, and what it means in a society where people are trying to be polite, in a relatively polite society, one that is not, where it's not pretended that the laws are what keep people from doing things, that the law enforcers protect us when they don't. You can go back, any of the recent, it's been fairly recently, anarchist audits of all of those ideas, so I'm not going to go any further into them. But what we have today is a police state profiting from creating criminals, from doing exactly the same sorts of things, answering to their masters, their corporate masters, and their political and religious masters and profiting from it by creating criminals for their masters to process through their system to remove as a burden from one space and put into a burden in another space, basically take it off their corporate books into private books that they take the money from us. And it's just a long, convoluted, ridiculous scheme. But it's the same thing that's been happening. It's the same thing that we broke away from England for. That's what I'm getting at. If you haven't been able to add that up in the conversation that we've had here so far, it's there. It's all in the numbers. It's all in the facts and what they did and why they did it. We're told it's about liberty. We're told it's about independence, but it was about corporations. And that's fine if you keep the corporations also in the space, that they too are made up of people. They come after people. They don't exist without people. And they recognize that because corporate law is extremely different from the sort of jurisdictional justice, natural law, these sorts of things, because you see it. They prosecute. They have their own rules. They have their own laws that they work under and that they function under, and they deal with us on a different level. And that's why there's so much more conversation here. We could go on and on forever, but I don't want to lose track of ultimately what I'm talking about in the relation to 250 years of doing this, of showing up at the polls and voting and voting for the lesser of two evils, and parties switching back and forth, and their ideas switching back and forth, and the debt becoming larger, and the government becoming larger, and the portion of what you and I get out of it becoming smaller and smaller. It's really been going on the entire time. It's what they intended the entire time, it would seem like to me. You know, we're at a place where the police state is profiteering off of the rest of us. We're tracked. Every single one of our moves, every purchase we make, it's tracked and taxed. That's what they were getting away from back then. And they can do it so much easier now. And you let them. You show up at the polls and give them permission to do it. They don't even have to demand that it gets done. And then we end up with something like what we have now, the closest thing to a Hitler America has ever had at the presidential helm. A charismatic, narcissistic, loyal to only those who cater to him, to things that he can profit off of. 2 billion. This is one of these fortuitous stories that broke here recently that really contributes to this conversation. 2 billion plus. 2 billion plus Trump has made over the last year or so. It's not even really been a year. If you remember, I told you about this when we talked about the election and we talked about crypto. I went through the so-called stable coin. It's an episode called Stable Con. Wow. Check it out, what he did there with the language. But that's what it is. And I told you that this was happening and that this is what was going to happen. More than 1 billion of that 2 billion that he's made was made on that crypto that is now worth about $1.79. It's under $2. It was $1.79 when I looked at this on the 3rd. Whatever it is where you are, it's still going to be really low whenever you are. The highest value was 75 something, and that was within a couple of days of the opening, and then it was if you bought at the $1.21 at the very initial opening that it opened at $1.21, you would have made three times your money if you held it all of this time and sold it at that $1.79. It's about 30% more. You would have made 30% on top of your money. You would have got you get some of your money back that you invested. You would have made 30% on top of that. That's nothing. That's not good. I said three times, I meant 30%. It's not a good investment, especially if you're talking about the high level of risk and the fact that most people bought after it was already much higher. So that means that almost everyone has lost. Like 97% of people lost their money on Trump. They just gave him $1 billion. That's what the people did. We have an $839 billion military budget, $1 billion military budget, down from 2024, but up 130 billion more from 2020. So not getting smaller, not reducing the debt, not saving things. It really sounds to me like the rich guys are still running up the debt and sending other people's children to die for corporate profits. To me, that's what we're celebrating. That's what July 4th is. 1,000 or so military deaths are recorded every year. Let's put that in perspective. So there are more than 2,000 people murdered on the streets of America by police in an average of 2 years over the last two decades. And that's only if you count certain ones. That's not even counting them sort of running over people. That's the ones that they shoot. And it's not that they shouldn't necessarily have the right or ability or whatever it is to shoot to protect people and property. It's that that's not what they do. They don't protect people and property. They get disrespected. You disrespect the crown. You disrespect the badge, you disrespect the authority, and they shoot you. They kill you. They didn't manage to kill the one they shot here in Topeka the other day, but they disrespected his authority, and apparently now, according to conservatives and everybody else that believes in the so-called rule of law, the guy screaming, "Hey, rule of law," is the first guy to suggest that a cop should kill somebody extrajudicially, that he should just shoot people instead of arrest, apprehend, and protect, see to it that the courts that actually know the law exercise the law and look at the claims against a person before deciding that they deserve to be executed on the street by some thug being disrespected, some gangster thug. Let me give you if we only gonna have a couple of minutes left here. Let me just give you an idea of how wonderful the Republic of America is doing after 250 years ago. San Marino was founded in 301 CE, traditionally, and it's the only sovereign republic city-state left in Italy. It's had the continuity of political and legal institutions since its founding, with a constitution in continuous use since 1600. They beat us to it. UNESCO recognizes them as one of the oldest republics in the world. It's a population of about 35,000 people. They have dual heads of state known as captains regent, and their judiciary is independent of the executive and legislative branches, so that the rule of law protecting citizens, it doesn't get usurped by the corporation, by the state itself. They are on the Council of Europe. They are not in the EU. They have a frequent rotation of leadership within years, and it is all by citizen oversight, and it proves what I say, what people like me say, that it can be done, that it is about the size, that the central authority has taken on too much and it has too much power, that individual power and control is where people are respected. It's where rights are protected. It's where individuals are empowered not only to protect themselves and to protect what they own, but to participate in the system, to be a part of the community, because it's a community and not a system, because you can see it working, because you can sign treaties and you can do business with the rest of the world, and you can protect yourself, and you can protect yourself by becoming friends with more people than the enemy has, by aligning yourself with the bigger power for the states that don't necessarily recognize the existence of you. They wouldn't recognize your method of running the way you do your things, but you're happy where you're at, and it just proves it can be done, that there is a place and a space that it can be done, that the anarchists are not wrong, that the libertarians are not wrong about wanting smaller or no government, that people can work as a community and they can do it for a really long time to provide for themselves and to get along with the rest of the world. And I don't have any more time to talk about Independence Day. I got to go. Thank you so much for hanging out and being a part of it all. If you found anything in the episode interesting or entertaining or informative, please share it with just one other person who you think might get something out of it. And thank you for hanging out, and we'll see you next time on Toward Anarchy.
Gun opponents point out correctly that the Second Amendment never says individuals have the right, a well-regulated militia. Being necessary to a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed.
The first half of that is always the anti-gunner's playfield, because they'll try to conflate militia meaning military, and it doesn't. It means the people. That's why they ended it with the people. We are the militia, right? So anti-gunner's paradise is the first half of the Second Amendment. They'll go, oh, it needs to be well-regulated. Well-regulated means in working order. If your house is well-regulated, you guys have a schedule, you eat at a certain time, that does not mean that the government shows up and goes, hey, now you guys got to watch the House of Dragons at 9 o'clock. That's not what that means. It means in working order. What they ignore if you're anti-gunner is the second half of that. The right of the people, the Constitution starts with we, the people, the right of the people to keep and bear arms, keep, hold them, and bear, carry, mean walk around with them, shall not be infringed. That's very clear.
You're listening to Toward Anarchy on the Republic Broadcasting Network.